breeze.
Buck Benny, the two-fisted, quick-triggered marksman who shoots from the hip and never misses.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another episode of the Jack Benny Show from the 1940-1941 season. Well, this episode is one that takes place supposedly on Valentine's Day. And I always think the Jack Benny story that most captures Valentine's Day is the story of Mary and the Rose. And I'll have Mary share that in a minute. But before I have her share it, I thought I would read a little bit. When Mary shares it, it's on the Johnny Carson show. You'll hear Johnny and Mary, but it's really poor audio. Someday we'll get good audio of that, but until then, at least we have some audio that exists. And before I read any of that, I wanted to say our contest winner for the Flubs contest was Karen. And Karen did a great job of picking out every possible flub that was in the show, and even a few that I didn't even pick up on. So she was the very first one to email to me, so I thought I would go ahead and say that Karen is our winner. I was going to read all the flubs she pointed out, but instead, I thought for this special presentation, I'd read a little bit of Mary's book, Mary Livingston's book that she helped write, just called simply Jack Benny, and this is from chapter 51 on page 303, and it says, "Every day since Jack has been gone, the florist has delivered one long stem rose to my house," Mary began. "For the first few weeks, I was in a state of deep mourning. It never occurred to me to ask who the roses were coming from. I can't begin to express the grief I felt. Jack's loss, our separation after 48 years of complete togetherness, my feeling of utter loneliness, even though I was surrounded by relatives and dear, dear friends who tried to cheer me up. Jack died the day after Christmas. The new year of 1975 came and went without my noticing it. I heard of people being numb with grief, but I had never fully understood what those words meant, not until I went through it myself. It must have been 7 or 8 weeks before I finally asked the maid who the daily flower was from. To my surprise, she had no idea. I called David Jones, our florist, and asked him. Jones remembered the call very well. I told Mary that quite a while before Jack passed away, he stopped into my shop to send a bouquet of flowers to a friend. As he was leaving, he suddenly turned back and said, 'David, if anything should happen to me, I want you to send my doll a red rose every day.' When I related Jack's conversation, there was complete silence. I could tell she was crying as she thanked me and said goodbye. Subsequently, Mary learned that Jack actually had included a provision for her flowers in his will. One red rose was to be delivered to her every day for the rest of her life. I never knew a kinder or more generous man," Jones continued, "and I certainly never met any two people who adored each other more than Jack and Mary. God, I love that man," said Mary, touching the wedding band she had never removed since her marriage in 1927. "I was the luckiest woman in the world to be his wife. Jack was such an easy man to live with. Can you imagine the sweetness, his wanting me to have a red rose every day to remind me of him, as if I could forget? All during our marriage, he constantly sent me flowers and gifts. Invariably, when Jack enclosed a card, he never signed his name. He would always draw a smiling face for me. That was his signature. He would write, 'Doll, I love you,' and then end with a happy face. Every once in a while, I also received flowers with a card signed, 'Love.' Underneath, he would draw a sad face. The corners of the mouth would be turned down. A trace of teardrops would be falling from his eyes. I got that card whenever we had an argument. I think I'll stop there. And that's another one of the Jack Benny books that's a good one to read. Anyway, without further ado, here is Mary and Johnny Carson to talk a little bit about Jack. Today's episode is called The Surprise Birthday Party, because Jack's birthday party, well, birthday, of course, was on Valentine's Day. What a perfect day for Jack Benny to be born. I hope you all had a wonderful Valentine's Day, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Is it true that you still get a red rose from Jack every day? You mentioned that.
Yes,
sweet. After Jack passed away, I think it was about a week later, a red rose came. No name, just one red rose. And I thought, isn't this lovely? Somebody sent me red rose, how dear. The next day, and still came, and I couldn't figure it out. And I said, well, who's the florist? You know, if I call a florist, they probably could tell me. Nobody knew. It wasn't until about, and I'm still getting them every day. And it was about, I guess, 6 months later when the florist, David Jones,
told you that
Jack had told him to send me a rose every day for the rest of my life.
Well, that is sweet. I mean, that gives you... That's the measure of the man.
And now Jack Benny and his doll are together forever. Rest well, Mary Livingston.
The Jell-O program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens the program with San Diego Serenade. One of the most significant things about Jell-O, ladies and gentlemen, is the fact that not only do many, many people serve Jell-O, but they serve it often. And the reason they serve it so frequently is because Jell-O does suggest itself for so many different occasions. For example, Jell-O is the first dessert you think of when you're pressed for time and want a quick yet delightful treat. Jell-O is the dessert you think of when there's a party to be planned because it's so colorful and swell tasty. And you turn to Jell-O when you want a luscious treat that's pleasantly inexpensive. Jell-O, with its rich, glowing colors and its unsurpassed flavor, is the ideal answer to every dessert situation. So order a supply from your grocer tomorrow, choosing any or all of Jell-O's six delicious flavors, strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, or lime. And by the way, strawberry, raspberry, and cherry Jell-O now have a new, improved flavor obtained by using a natural flavor base artificially enhanced. And the result is a distinctive goodness that you definitely do not want to miss. Try a glistening mold of rich, tempting Jell-O tomorrow. Serenade played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, last Friday the 14th, which was Valentine's Day, was also the birthday of our master of ceremonies, Jack Benny, who was exactly...
Yes, sir.
...years of age. So tonight, we would like to reenact the events which occurred at Jack's house Friday evening. It was about 7 p.m., and a little group consisting of Jack, Mr. Billingsley, the boarder, and Mary, who had been dropped by to go to a movie, were seated around the dinner table. Let us eavesdrop, shall we?
Oh, boy, there's nothing like eating at home, I always say. Mary, pass some of those extra fancy, solid-pack stewed tomatoes. Will you?
Oh, stop building them up.
Well, they're delicious. Take some more.
I'm tired of tomatoes. Where's the meat?
It's coming. Rochester, I'm taking Miss Livingston to a movie. So will you please hurry with that extra choice, Eastern cut, prime ribs of beef.
You mean that dinky little pot roast?
Never mind. Bring it in.
It's a pretty tough meat. It's a pretty tough piece of meat, boss. I don't know if it's done yet.
Well, stick a fork in it.
I did, and I can't get it out.
Well, bring it in anyway.
Okay.
Say, Mary, aren't these nice dishes? Lovely pattern, isn't it?
Yeah. Is this a set you won at the Beverly Theater?
All but the soup tureen. I got that at the Oriental. Gee, these tomatoes are good.
They're not seasoned enough. Pass me that salt shaker you won at Ocean Park.
Here you are. And that wise guy said I couldn't break those balloons. How are you enjoying your dinner, Mr. Billingsley?
Just fine, thank you.
Good, good.
This watercress is delicious.
Those are ferns, Mr. Billingsley. You're eating the centerpiece there.
Say, Jack.
What?
Why is Mr. Billingsley wearing that fife and drum around his neck?
That fife and drum?
Yeah.
Well, that's my fault. I told him we were having Yankee pot roast tonight. Oh, by the way, Mr. Billingsley, Miss Livingston and I are going to see a movie after dinner. Would you care to join us?
No, thank you. I'm going to stay home tonight and get stiff.
Get stiff? I thought you didn't drink anymore.
I don't. I'm going to sit in the icebox.
Oh. Oh. Oh, I see.
Here you are, folks. Make way for the pot roast.
Mmm, that smells good. Did you get the fork out of it, Rochester?
Only the handle.
You mean the prongs are still in the meat?
Don't worry, boss. I put a Band-Aid there so you won't bite into them.
That's very thoughtful of you. What do you want, Mary? A rare piece or an outside cut?
Give me the Band-Aid. That looks tender.
You watch out or you won't get any. Rochester, hand me the pot roast.
Here you are.
You'd think that... Whoa! 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 Whoa, my finger!
The plate's kind of hot, boss.
Well, it's a fine time to tell me. Never saw such a careless... Now, where the heck is the pot roast?
There it is, up on the chandelier.
On the chandelier? Well, I'll be darned.
It's dripping on my drum.
Well, move over a little. Rochester, you're so clumsy. Now go out in the kitchen and fix up a few cold cuts. We got to eat something.
Let's take some oranges and knock down the pot roast.
You can get a ladder and take it down later. Now bring in the cold cuts.
How would you like some genuine, boneless, skinless, imported Norwegian sardines?
Packed in virgin olive oil. Bring them in, Rochester. Now, Mary, while we're waiting, have some more stewed tomatoes.
A fine meal.
Well, they're very good for you. It'll make you strong.
I'm strong enough now to walk to a restaurant.
Well, if you don't like the tomatoes, don't eat them.
Will you pass the bread, please?
Here you are, Mr. Billingsley. Would you like some butter, too?
I've never been there, but I hear it's lovely.
Yes. Yeah. What? Gee, that doesn't make any sense at all. Say, Mary, I've got an idea. Why don't we go to the movie and then eat later?
Oh, Jack, I don't want to see Love Thy Neighbor again. Getting so now, I can't even laugh at your love scene with Mary Martin.
You're not supposed to laugh at that. Hey, Rochester, we're going to a movie, so never mind those sardines.
I already opened them.
Oh. Well, you can eat them.
I made some fried chicken for myself.
What? Rochester, this is only Friday, and I told you we're not having that chicken until Sunday. I'm having some people over at the house.
The way it's been raining lately, the house might not be here Sunday.
Oh, don't be so panicky. It is raining kind of hard, but it's nothing to worry about.
And why did you build an ark?
I've got to have a hobby, don't I? Anyway, to hear you two talk, I think it was a regular flood or something.
Well, all I know is the milkman arrived on a surfboard this morning.
That's Mr. Kahanamoku. He's a Hawaiian. And another thing, I won't stand for anybody running down the California weather.
Quiet, or I'll stick my fork in your water wings.
You wouldn't dare. Sister. Now, come on, Mary. We're going to the movies.
Hey, boss.
What is it, Rochester?
There's a big crowd of people coming up the front steps.
A crowd of people?
Open up. Come on, open up.
What's going on here?
You'll find out. Come on in, fellas.
Surprise!
Doggone, a surprise birthday party. Don, Dennis, and Phil.
Come on, kids. One, two. For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow.
Which nobody can deny. Gee whiz, fellas, I can't get over. Come on in and take your things off. Come on, everybody. Wipe your feet. Come on, fellas, you guys surprising me like this. No kidding.
You didn't think we'd forget your birthday, did you, Jackson?
No, but gosh, all this fuss.
Well, believe me, Jack, you've been so darn nice to the whole gang, you're entitled to it.
Yeah, entitled.
Gee, I don't know what to say. I'm all choked up. This is really the last thing in the world I expected. You know, I was just sitting here getting ready to go to a movie, not even thinking about little me having a birthday party, and then you all barged in. Gee. Look, fellas, I'll just run down and see my picture and be back in 84 minutes.
Come back here.
Oh, yes. I'm so excited, Mary. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Say, Mr. Benny, what's that up there on the chandelier?
A pot roast, Dennis. It's a long story. But don't worry about it, kid.
A pot roast on the chandelier, and he tells me not to worry.
Forget it, will you? I'll have Rochester take it down a few minutes and make sandwiches.
I just sent him to the store to buy some food.
Oh. You give him any money?
Uh-huh. I took $3 out of the sugar bowl.
Mary, the sugar bowl is for laundry. If you want to buy groceries, you take the money out of the cookie jar.
I tried to, and a cobra stuck his head out.
That's my East Indian burglar alarm. Say, Don, what's that you're hiding behind your back?
Well, Jack, Mary, Dennis, Phil, and myself all chipped in and bought you a birthday present. And believe me, Jack, it comes right from the heart.
A present? Doggone you guys. You'll have me bawling in a minute. You give it to me, I'll unwrap it.
Hold it, Jackson. A speech goes with this, and I'm going to make it.
Well.
Mr. Benny, ladies and gentlemen, and members of the Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce.
Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce?
I copied this out of a book. Forget that part.
Okay, go ahead.
It is with great pride, or make it pride.
Yeah,
it is
make
with
it
great
pride
and pleasure that I and my fellow colleagues...
Polly, go ahead.
Yes, present you with this beautiful gift as a token of our loyalty, devotion, and gastronomical appreciation. Here you are, Jackson. Here it is.
Gee whiz, fellas, I know it's my birthday, but you... Gosh, you shouldn't have gone to all this... Well, for heaven's sake, isn't that beautiful?
You like it, Jack?
Oh, boy, just what I needed. A bicycle pump. Gee, with a hose and all. Which one of you heels suggested this?
Well, we didn't know what to buy you, Jackson. You've got everything.
Everything but a bicycle pump. Now I've got that. Oh, well. Thanks anyway, fellas. I'll wear it in good health. Rochester, there's someone at the door.
I told you he went out for the groceries.
Oh, yes, I'll answer. Probably another telegram. I've been getting them all day long.
Hello, boss, it's me.
Rochester, you've got a key. Why make me open the door?
I just want to give you an idea what I go through.
It's too bad about you. What'd you bring from the market?
Well, I got some limes and lemons and grape juice for the punch.
For the punch? Well, what are we going to have to eat?
Boss, with the punch I make, people have been known to go for days without eating.
Well, we still have to have food. And if you can't find anything in the kitchen, run next door to Mr. Ronald Coleman's. This is the day his cook makes popovers.
Okay.
Say, fellas, we'll have something to eat in a little while. In the meantime, let's play games or something.
I'll call up some chorus girls and we'll play post office.
That's all we need, chorus girls and no food. Say, I'll tell you what, fellas. How about playing blind man's buff?
Oh, that's well.
All right, now look it. I'll be the blind man. Who's got a handkerchief?
Just take off your glasses and we're all set.
Oh, stop, will you? Have you got a handkerchief, Don?
Well, I know a better game, Jack. Let's play Jell-O.
Oh, fine. How do you play it?
Well, I'll take a lot of boxes of Jell-O and hide them all over the house.
Uh-huh.
And the first one that finds all six delicious flavors, strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime...
Yeah?
...wins a $10 prize.
Say, that's a swell game.
Yeah. Hey, wait a minute, Don. Who puts up the $10?
Well, Jack, it's your house.
There'll be no gambling on the premises. Blind man's buff, everybody. Come on. Blindfold me, somebody.
Take it easy, Jackson. The last time we played this game, it took us 2 hours to get your head out of the goldfish bowl.
Oh, that's right.
I know a swell game, Mr. Benny. It's called Clap Hands.
What's that?
Well, you folks sit down. I'll sing a song, and when it's all over, you all clap hands.
A fine game. It's a little dull, isn't it, Dennis?
It's better than getting your head caught in a goldfish bowl.
Well, maybe you're right. Sit down, everybody. Dennis is going to sing for us.
I want to play that game where I can win $10.
Well, go on a quiz program and don't bother us. Go ahead, Dennis. Sing something. Rochester, there's someone at the door.
Maybe it's me again.
Answer that door. Sing, Dennis. He's the laziest person I ever met.
Take you home again, Kathleen, across the ocean wild and wide, to where your heart has ever been, since first you were my bonny bride. My roses all have left your cheek. I've watched them fade away and die. Your voice is sad whene'er you speak, and tears be dim your loving eyes. Oh, I will take you back, Kathleen, to where your heart will feel no pain, and when the fields are fresh and green, I'll take you to your home again.
Hey, that was a swell game, Dennis. Let's do it again Sunday on the program. Who was at the door, Rochester?
It was a special delivery, boss. I gave it to Miss Livingston.
Oh, you give the boy a tip?
How could I? You keep the tip money in the glue pot.
Well, I would have reimbursed you later. What's the letter, Mary?
It's a comic Valentine from New York.
New York, eh? Well, I have a pretty good idea who it's from. What kind of a Valentine did Arsenic and Old Lace send me? Read it.
To a comedian. Your eyes are blue, your hair is gray, and you're as dumb as Dennis Day.
That's very funny.
Yeah, very.
Wait till Alan gets the Valentine I sent him. Somebody at the door, Rochester.
How do you know I'm back for Mr. Coleman?
I see you standing there. Now stop eating those popovers and answer the door.
Okay. Doors. I'd like to get a job working in a barrel.
That's just silly. What could he do in a barrel? Always grumbling.
Hey, boss, look who's here.
Well, I'll be... Hey, fellas, look.
Hiya, Buck.
Andy. Divine, we haven't seen you in 6 months. How did you happen to drop in?
Well, Buck, I heard it was your birthday, so I thought I'd come over and surprise you.
You certainly did.
How old are you, Buck?
Well, Andy, I'll never see 36 again.
Even on a clear day.
That's very cute, Andy, and where's my present?
Your present?
Yeah.
I got two of them, Buck. Ma sent you a jug of sweet cider.
Uh-huh.
And Pa sent you a jug of hard cider.
Well, look at that. Two jugs. Which is which, Andy?
There goes Pa's.
Hey, look out. It's spilling all over the floor.
Quick, get me a sponge and a pillow.
Get away from there, Harris. What's the matter with you?
Say, Andy, you're putting on a little weight, aren't you?
Yeah, ain't we?
That's telling them, Andy. You're pretty sharp tonight.
Sit down at the table, everybody. The food's ready.
Oh, boy, Andy.
Take it easy. Take it easy. The plates are all fixed.
Gee, 2.5 sardines apiece.
And lots of popovers. Dig in, kids.
There's someone at the door, Rochester. I'm busy, boss. Answer that door.
Yes, and be quick about it. Well, Andy, I'm sure glad you dropped in. I had no idea that you'd remember my birthday. As a matter of fact, I didn't know...
Oh, good evening. Come right in, Mr. Marshall.
Yikes! Holy smoke, it's Herbie.
Hello, everybody. Happy birthday, Jack.
Well, thanks. Well, my good gee whiz, Herbert Marshall at my house. Quick, Mary, phone Luella Parsons.
She'll never believe it.
Phone her anyway. Well, Bart, you're the last person in the world I expected to see on my birthday. No, Mary and I were just... Oh, I'm sorry. This is Andy Devine.
How do you do, Mr. Devine?
I'm glad to know you, Mr. Marshall. You want to buy a horse?
Andy, not now. Jeez, as I started to say, Bart, Mary and I were just sitting here, not even thinking of having company on my birthday.
Stop looking at the package in his hand.
Not looking at it.
Oh, yes, the package. Here you are, Jack. A little remembrance. Many happy returns, old boy.
A present for me? Gee, I feel like a darn fool. I didn't get a thing for you, you know.
This is your birthday, not Christmas.
Oh, yeah, what am I thinking of? Hey, Dennis, get Mr. Marshall a chair. Gee, I'm all thumbs opening this package.
Here's a chair for you, Hubert.
Thanks, Dennis.
Yeah, I can't seem to get this string untied.
Stop shaking.
Well, I'm so anxious.
My name is Billingsley, Mr. Marshall.
Well, I... I'm glad to know you, Mr. Billingsley.
Mr. Billingsley, sit down, please. Darn this string. Gee, I'm trying to open this present. There, I got it. Well, thanks, Bart. Thanks a million. Hey, fellas, look. Look what he gave me. Look at these beautiful cufflinks. I mean, cufflinks. Gosh. Look, God, gee, 14 carats.
Jeepers, he looked already.
Well, they're beautiful. By the way, Bart, what's in that other box?
That's a gardenia. I brought it for Mary.
Well.
He's just like all the other fellas. He starts out with orchids, and now I'm now down to a gardenia.
Quiet.
Very good, Mary.
Been better if she hadn't muffed it, Bart. Gee, I can't get over these couplings. Thanks again, Bart. Thanks.
I'm so glad you like my gift, Jack. You know, Jack, it's hard at the time to mention it, but I rather had the impression that you didn't like me.
I didn't like you? Why, Bart, what do you mean?
Well, I felt that you resented my taking over your program while you were in New York.
I resented me? Listen, fellas, did I ever say one word against this gentleman? Did I? You see, Bart, you're wrong. I regard you as one of my best friends.
Ah, oh, you're full of kaplink.
Mary, smell your gardenia. Well, Bart, won't you join us at the table?
Yeah, sit down, Herbie, and have some chow.
Thanks, I believe I will.
Now, here's the plate, Bart, all fixed.
Well, 2½ sardines and a biscuit.
Well, it's not much. I really must apologize.
Not at all. This is fun. It's like being shipwrecked.
Well, that's what we're having, a shipwreck party, you know? Yes, sir.
Won't you have some of this punch, Bart? It's very good.
Yes, have a cup, Bart.
My, what a beautiful punch bowl.
Yes, yes, it is.
Ronnie Coleman's, isn't it?
Yes, it is, it is. We're very dear friends, you know. Oh, Rochester, bring in Mr. Marshall some tea. Tea. You'd like some tea, wouldn't you, Bart?
Yes, thank you.
How would you like it, Bart? With lemon or with irradiated, homogenized vitamin D evaporated milk? You can have either one.
Well, Jack, I think I'll just have some extra juicy, sun-ripened lemon.
Oh, okay. Some tea with lemon, Rochester.
Very good, sir.
Well, Andy, you never thought you were going to meet Herbert Marshall at my house, did you?
Gosh, no. I feel like a darn fool with no shoes on.
Well, keep them under the table. Nobody will notice it. Do you like the sardines, Bart?
They're delicious.
Oh, my goodness. Sardines and you haven't got a finger bowl. Oh, Rochester.
Yes, boss.
Bring in the finger bowls.
We never had any.
Well, then bring in saucers. Bring them in. You'll have one in a minute, Bart.
By the way, Jack, what's that hanging up there on the chandelier?
That's a pot roast.
A pot roast on the chandelier?
Yes.
Weird custom, isn't it?
Oh, it's not a custom, it's an accident. You see, Bart, I know it sounds fantastic, but the pot roast bounced up there, you know?
Bounced?
Yeah. You see, here's exactly what happened. I was just having a quiet little dinner at home, not expecting anybody to drop in, and my man Rochester brought in this hot plate, see? Well, I didn't know it was hot, and I grabbed for it. You see, the pot roast was on the plate, see? And the minute my fingers touched it, I threw it up in the air. Well, that's how it happened. It sounds silly, but that's the whole story.
When you send in 10 cents for the new desserts recipe book, what does it buy you? Well, just listen to this. And remember, for just one single solitary dime, too. You get 365 different suggestions and recipes for all kinds of grand, tempting desserts. That's a new dessert for every day, right straight through the whole year. There are ideas for simple family desserts, special party treats, desserts for holidays, desserts for all occasions, big and small. And they've arranged this big 48-page book in such a clever, original way that you can turn right to the dessert idea you want in 5 seconds or less. The moment you lay eyes on it, you'll say it's the smartest way to design a recipe book that anybody ever thought of. And you'll also say it's the most beautiful book of its kind ever printed. Pictures, Say, you never saw so many lovely paintings and color photographs in your life. But get the book and see for yourself. Place a dime in coin or stamps in an envelope and send your name and address and mail it to Don Wilson, care of General Foods, Battle Creek, Michigan. That's right, just 10 cents, and the address is Don Wilson, care of General Foods, Battle Creek, Michigan. Do it tonight.
The last number of the 20th program in the current Jell-O series, and we will be with you again next Sunday night at the same time, broadcasting from Palm Springs, California.
Palm Springs?
Yes, sir. We're all going to have a little vacation. Say, Bart, would you like to come to Palm Springs with us?
I don't think I'll be able to, Jack. I'm making a picture, you know.
Oh. Well, if you can possibly make it, look us up. We'll be staying at the Cactus Blossom Auto Corps. Good night, folks.
J-E-L-L-O.
S-A-N-K-A, Sanka.
That's the name to write in your memory book, ladies and gentlemen.
S-A-N-K-A, Sanka.
That's the name to say to your grocer, because Sanka is real coffee.
It has a rich, delectable flavor.
And it protects sleep, because it never prevents sleep. It's had the sleep-disturbing caffeine removed, so anybody can drink delicious Sanka coffee and sleep. Sanka Coffee presents We the People over another network every Tuesday night. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to a fantastic episode of the Fred Allen Show. I talk about a couple things tonight. Number one, I hope you folks have realized that I've started airing shows on Saturday nights that are 75 years old each week to go along with my Jack Benny shows that are 75 years old. And they have really good sound quality, and so you might want to be tuning into those. Starting in a couple weeks, Walter Tetley, famous for being Julius Abruzzo on the Jack Benny Show, also from the Great Gildersleeve, will start appearing on the Fred Allen Show in some of his earliest appearances ever in radio. And so that will be kind of fun. And for tonight's episode, I thought I'd get a little into tying this a little bit into the Tuesday episode of the Jack Benny Show, where Jack was talking about race relations and religion and how we need to not be prejudiced and we need to be tolerant of each other and that sort of thing. Very well done, by the way, and if you haven't listened to that one, you should. But I found it interesting that during that episode, after talking about tolerance and the whole thing, they immediately go into the Native American culture and do a broad stereotypes on Indians, the whole how and ugh and all that stuff. And I just thought, you know, really strange to have that juxtapositioned against him talking about how they need to treat blacks with more dignity and so forth. And then they slam on the Native Americans in a way. Well, this episode tonight and the one next week and a number of the episodes of the Fred Allen Show paint Native Americans in a negative light as well, and go for the huge stereotypes and things. It's unfortunate that it took us so many years to kind of respect Native Americans and so forth. But anyway, if any of you listening are Native Americans, I apologize for if any of these shows are insulting in any way to anyone, really. But of course, we always have to put it in the historical context of when they were created, and I think it's just kind of interesting to see how shows change over the years and how certain types of humor go out and others stay in longer than you'd think they would, or it switches over from offending one race or one religion to another, And I just, you know, that's just part of old-time radio and listening to it. I try and just take it all as kind of a history lesson. Tonight, speaking of lessons, you're going to get a lesson on milk. And who else but Fred Allen could bring us a skit about milk? So I think this is one of the more different skits that you're going to hear on any shows you listen to this year. And it's just kind of interesting to have a skit about that. So without further ado, here is a wonderful Fred Allen show. He on this episode, Fred mentions the East Coast feed, saying that they did something differently on the East Coast and West Coast, so you might want to compare those again, kind of fun. I've already listed the East Coast feed, and here's the West, and as usual, the West has been recorded on a higher fidelity of file, and so there's that, and I think it also sounds like the transcription discs were probably in slightly better shape, but really the East Coast don't sound bad either on these episodes, so in fact, last week I think the East Coast was better than the West Coast after I listened to them both for sound quality. But anyway, enjoy this episode. We'll see you Saturday probably for some more Fred Allen, and then next Friday for even more Fred Allen. And of course, about every other Monday, Fred Allen ends up being on The Big Show. So tune in for that. The Big Show this week was great. Didn't have Fred Allen on it, but it was a really good episode with Judy Garland and Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin and Groucho Marx, all doing a great job. So tune into that if you haven't had a chance yet. And we'll see you next time.
The Texaco Star Theater. The more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast welcome you to an hour of mirth and melody with our star comedian, Fred Allen, Kenny Baker, and Portland Hoffa. Our guest, New York's favorite restaurateur, Lindy. The Martins and Al Goodman's orchestra. It's Texaco time. Ladies and gentlemen, you never can be sure of your in-laws. You never can be sure of the weather.
No.
You never can be sure of a beef stew.
Well, you remember me.
There's only one thing you can be sure of. It's Wednesday night, and here is that man again, Fred Allen in person.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, Jimmy, what are you laughing at?
I don't know.
Some joke you had left over from an old year with Cantor or something? Jimmy, for once you are correct. You cannot be sure of anything these days.
How do you mean, Fred?
Well, didn't you read about the aquarium?
No, I don't very often get
to... Well, you certainly think that an institution like the aquarium that has been down in Battery Park for 40 years was here to stay, wouldn't you?
Yes.
But no, the aquarium has got to go, Jimmy.
Well, if you've got to go,
well,
you've
I know,
got
to even go. If you're an aquarium. But first, you know, the city tore down the L first. Now it's dispossessing the eel. They're going to spend two million. I didn't expect anything. I was going along. Just signal. We'll be glad to stop any place here for reaction. You know, they're going to spend, the city's going to spend $2 million to build a new aquarium up in the Bronx. $2 million so the fish can meet a better class of people.
Look, Fred, let's get on with the newsreel,
well,
shall we?
Let's finish this aquarium thing. You know, I read last Sunday in the paper, there's an aquarium, a fish lover there. Yeah, sure, he's part seal, the way his flippers are going. I read that the city is expecting a deficit next year, Jimmy, and here it is moving 200,000 gallons of water and 12,000 fish from the Battery way uptown to the Bronx. Now, that's going to cost plenty more. If the mayor sends those fish uptown by the subway, the IRT, mm-hmm. 12,000 fish at a nickel a head, well, there's $600 more right there.
Fred, the newsreels.
$2,600,000 to put an aquarium in the Bronx. Jimmy, if the people in the Bronx want to see fish, let them go downtown to the Fulton Fish Market.
Listen, Fred.
An aquarium in the Bronx. All I've got to say, Jimmy, is if the city is going to put an aquarium in the Bronx, they'll have to insure the herring. Now, that's more. You can't get a good herring insurance, man. Well, all
Fred,
right.
Fred, please,
all
the newsreels,
right,
will you?
All right, I'm not really through, but who am I? After all. But we'll get ahead with the news. The Texaco News presents its highlight from the world of news. New York City, New York. Speaking at a conference of the League for Industrial Democracy, Department of Markets official says that the owners of New York retail meat markets threaten to close in protest over high meat prices. Texaco News, with microphone disguised as a turkey leg, presents Vox Chop interviews to get reactions to advancing meat prices. First, a prominent authority on meat addresses us, Dr. Asa Brindle.
Correction, please.
I beg your pardon?
Dr. Brindle couldn't come. I am deputizing for him.
Oh, well, who are you?
I am Dr. Tekla Pearl.
Dr. Tekla Pearl. And are you a cattle expert, doctor?
No, I am an authority on swine.
Yes, you are, that, aren't you? A swine authority? We really ought to put up a no-porking sign around here.
No-porking, yes, very good.
Well, tell us, doctor, what is causing these rising meat prices?
It's the scarcity of cows.
The scarcity? Well, what is responsible for the scarcity?
Hollywood.
Hollywood, really?
Compel Hollywood to stop making Western pictures and meat prices will go down.
Your theory is?
Thousands of cows who are merely being stooges for Technicolor cowboys can be butchered and sold. This would lower the price of meat and put Hopalong Cassidy back on relief.
This will settle the consumer's beef, then, Dr. Pearl.
That is my opinion. Dr. Brindle concurs.
Well, thank you for... Oh, say, I forgot to ask you. What happened to Dr. Brindle tonight?
Dr. Brindle is home with ptomaine.
A meat authority stricken with ptomaine?
Yes, a friend gave him a bum steer at a barbecue.
It could happen to you, and the sooner the better, Dr. Tekla Pearl. A family man who resents the steadily rising meat prices is Putney Davin. You buy a lot of meat, do you, Putney?
Yeah, once a week, but I keep getting less and less.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, for 20 years, every Saturday night, I've been taking a dollar out of me pay and stopping at the butcher's.
Oh, to buy a dollar's worth of meat?
Yeah, it used to last us through the week.
It used to?
Yeah, back in 1920, I'd go into the butcher's, slap me buck down on a chopping block.
Yeah?
The butcher'd give me a cleaver and a lantern, open the icebox door and say, help yourself.
And you would?
I'd chop a cow in half, braid a couple of lambs, load me pockets full of tripe and kidneys and go home.
You were messy, but happy. Well, this was back in 1920. Now, when did they start to cut down?
In 1925.
Did the butcher stop you from going in the icebox?
Oh, no, I was still going in. But the butcher was going in with me and watching.
Well, how long did this vogue last?
Until 1930. I was still buying my dollar's worth.
And still going in?
No, the butcher was going in the icebox alone. I had to wait outside and take what he'd give me.
And meat still kept going up.
In 1938, every Saturday night, all I'm getting for me buck is a pig's head.
Well, you could have bought something else, couldn't you?
Oh, no, no. It had to be a pig's head. It had to see us through the week.
Unpleasant for both of you, I'd say, our short acquaintance. Well, what happened in 1939?
1939, all I'm getting is flank, shanks, and tendons.
And in 1940?
I'm getting $1 worth of hamburger. I'm carrying it home in an envelope.
Oh. What about the meat prices today, Putney?
They're brutal. Last Saturday night, I go into the butcher's.
Yeah?
What do you think I get for me buck?
What?
The butcher lets me smell the meat hook.
Well, that accounts for that bicarbonate on your nose, and thank you, Putney Davin. A housewife who is up in arms over high meat prices is Mrs. Yandel Sturm. What action are you taking, Mrs. Yandel Sturm?
Us housewives is prepared.
Prepared for what?
We ain't cooking nothing but mock meat dishes.
Mock meat dishes? You mean like mock turtle?
Yeah. Mock meatballs, mock cutlets, mock hot dogs.
Mock frankfurters? How are they made?
Oh, I got the recipe right here.
Oh, the recipe with you, have
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Well, may we have it, please?
Sure. Recipe for mock hot dogs. Take one old rubber glove, butter well inside, stuff fingers with chopped eggplant, wild rice, and breadcrumbs, add pinch of flour and yeast, put rubber glove in slow oven and bake for 2 hours.
And this comes out frankfurters?
Yeah. You cut the fingers off the rubber glove, you got 4 mock hot dogs.
Well, what do you do with the thumb?
Don't ask me. I got 2 closets full of them.
Tell me, what is your favorite anti-meat dish, Mrs. Sturm?
Mock omelets.
Mock omelets? Well, how do you serve a mock omelet?
Well, my husband cackles, and I lay a wheat cake on the table.
That takes you off, but not as brilliantly as on the first show. And thank you, Mrs. Gandalf Sturm. A downtown delicatessen dealer who resents increasing meat prices is Prentice Blauvogel. Now, Prentice...
Please, not Prentice. It's a Salami Sam.
Salami Sam?
This everybody in the delicatessen game is calling me.
Salami Sam?
Sometimes I am knowing the party well, then they are calling me Sammy. Salami Sammy.
Salami Sammy. Well, where is your delicatessen, Sammy?
Well, for instance, you are coming up Rivington Street to Pinkus's Pickle Parlor.
Yeah?
You are walking kitty corner across the street, turning left.
Yeah?
Taking a deep breath.
Take a deep breath?
Yes, and this is leading you direct to Salami Sammy. By the window, a tongue is hanging.
A tongue hangs outside?
That is a signal. You are seeing outside that tongue, you are knowing inside the sandwiches.
Well, what about the meat prices?
Oh, every day prices is advancing. Every day I am going outside, the painting on the window, under the tongue, new prices.
Every day?
Every day till today. Today is coming the last straw.
What happened?
For 2 years, outside, the tongue is hanging.
Uh-huh.
For 2 years, I am painting on the window under the tongue the new prices. For 2 years, nothing is happening.
And today?
Meat is finally going too high.
Well, how do you know?
This morning, when I am painting under the tongue new high prices...
Yes?
The tongue is going...
Will eventually hold your tongue, and thank you, Salami Sam. If meat prices continue to rise, meat may soon become a luxury commodity. Meat may become so rare, the day will come when we shall hear romantic episodes like this. 2 sweethearts sit on a divan. The lights are low. The boy speaks.
Close your eyes, darling.
Yes, John.
Hold out your hand.
Yes, John.
Now open your eyes. Look.
Oh, John, you shouldn't have been so extravagant.
Are we engaged now, darling?
And how? This is the biggest solitaire calf's liver I've ever seen.
Darling!
Thank you. And so, from the meat course, we turn from our meat course for dessert to a Mexican confection, a short order of perfidia dished up by Kenny Baker.
perfidia. For I have found the love of my life in somebody else's arms. Your eyes are echoing perfidia, forgetful of a promise of love, you're sharing another's charm. With a sad lament, my dreams have faded like a broken melody. While the gods of love look down and laugh at what romantic fools we mortals be. And now I know my love was not for you, and so I'll take it back with a sigh, perfidious one. Goodbye. Strangers, and we were sweethearts for so long. Lovers, until you let your love go wrong. Kiss me, then give your heart to someone new. Darling, this is our last adieu. Sad lament, my dreams have faded like a broken melody. While the gods of love look down and laugh, what mortal fools we all are be. And now I know my love was not for you, and so I'll take it back with a sigh, perfidious one. Goodbye.
Thank you. That's very nice, Kenny. Oh, say, Jimmy.
Yes, Fred?
I just noticed that you're not shivering so much tonight. Are you finally getting accustomed to our New York winters after all of those years you spent out in balmy California?
Yes, yes, I'm getting used to cold weather now, Fred. Of course, a few things still bother me.
Such as what?
Well, my ears, for instance.
Really?
Yes, I don't mind them dropping off on cold days, but it's an awful bother sticking them back on.
I know. You've got that left one on upside down tonight, I just noticed.
And then another thing, Fred, that bothers me is the customs that people have here.
Really?
Say, tell me, why do they always hang those shiny glass things on the eaves on cold days?
Shiny glass? Well, Jimmy, those are icicles.
Well, what do you know?
Yes, and that white stuff that comes tumbling down, Jimmy, that's snow.
Really?
Yes.
Not soap flakes?
No, you may wash with it out in California. It's so rare. But here we just use it as snow. Well, I can see that you don't know much about cold weather, Jimmy.
Well, maybe not, Fred. But there's one thing that I do know. The colder the day, the more certain you can be that duds, those useless slow-action elements in gasoline, will be at work, slowing down starts and running down the battery. Duds are a terrific handicap to the few ounces of chilled gasoline in the carburetor that have the big job of starting your cold engine. For duds just won't take the spark readily. But you don't get duds in Texaco Fire Chief gasoline. The duds are out. That's why Fire Chief is famous as a gasoline that's quick to start, accelerate, warm up. And this faster response to starter and accelerator means gasoline economy, too. So for fast, thrifty winter action, try Fire Chief. There's not a dud in the tank full.
Thank you.
Maestro Goodman and his daily racing form ensemble have just played Volga Boatman across the board. Now, at this time, ladies and gentlemen... Oh, it's always something. If it isn't the door, it's the telephone. Hello.
This is the Bob Radio Survey. We're checking on radio listeners.
Yes?
What radio program are you listening to?
The Fred Allen program.
Well, that's one. Goodbye.
Well, at least it cost him a nickel to insult me. Hello?
That party reversed the charges.
A million places I can go and get insulted for nothing, and I have to stay here.
Mr. Allen!
Well, it's Portland. I thought with your outfit you joined the Northwest Mounted there.
If Mama comes, will you tell her I couldn't wait?
Well, where is your mother?
Oh, she went to send a telegram. She'll be 2 hours.
It takes your mother 2 hours to write 10 words?
No. Mama's waiting to see the stage show.
What has the stage show got to do with your mother's telegram?
Well, Mama saw a big sign that said Western Union.
Oh, and when she got inside?
It was the Roxy.
When she comes out, tell her to go across to the Globe where Night Train is playing and get an upper berth. She'll get a good night's rest.
I'll tell her. Well, goodbye.
Well, wait a minute now. Where are you going?
Oh, I've got to go to the hospital.
Oh, somebody sick?
Everybody's sick in the hospital.
Someday I will learn to keep my big mouth shut, or only part of it shut, so I won't get in half as much trouble. Look, I'm going to open my under-nose orifice once more, and this time to ask you a leading question. Who is our guest?
Why, he is Lindy.
Whom is our guest? There may be a stickler out west.
He is Lindy, the gentleman who runs the most famous restaurant on Broadway.
Well, you don't mean that New York's beloved keeper of the kipper has been coaxed out of his haven of hospitality just for a little old interview.
Yes. Mr. Allen, meet Lindy.
Well, good evening, Lindy.
Good evening, Fred.
Well, Lindy, this will be the first time I have ever talked to you that I didn't wind up getting the check.
That's right, Fred. Tonight, I am getting the check.
And you're not kidding, either. Your attorney was here till 5 minutes before we went on the air, getting the salary straightened up. You know, everybody on Broadway calls you Lindy. Lindy, is that your real handle?
No, my name is Leo Lindemann.
Well, do you think I should call you Mr. Lindemann? You know, to give the interview a little class for your clients out west.
If you want me to feel at home, Fred, just call me Lindy.
Okay, Lindy. Now, before we start, you're all relaxed and at ease and everything.
I'm fine and enjoying it.
You locked the cash register before you came out, I mean. You won't start biting your nails and worrying in the middle of the program.
No, Fred, I'm all set.
Good. Well, first of all, Lindy, for the benefit of those who haven't read about your famous restaurant in the Broadway columns, where is your meal mart situated?
I have 2 branches, Fred. The old Lindy's next to the Rivoli Theater, and the new Lindy's across the street from the Capitol.
And you personally supervise both places?
That's right.
Well, do you have a split personality? or do you use the same magnetism at both places?
I'm just Lindy all over.
That's you all over. Well, how long you may get a picture offer out of this yet, you know? 20,000 Leagues Under the Herring or something, you know, they're going to get the musicals. Well, tell me, Lindy, how long have you been a Main Street Boniface?
20 years, Fred. This week I'm celebrating my 20th anniversary.
Well, congratulations. 20 years. And during that time, you have been host to about every celebrity known along the gay white way.
Yes, actors, authors, producers, and songwriters. They all seem to like my plays.
Especially songwriters.
Yes, Fred. The boys say some of America's greatest songs have been written on my menus.
Well, isn't that rather risky? If a songwriter got some of your dishes mixed in with his lyrics, why, the nation might wind up singing Genie with the Light Brown Blintzes. But apart from the Tin Pan Alley boys, who are some of the other famous folk who dine at your gastronomic grotto, Lindy?
Well, there's Damon Runyon, J. Edgar Hoover, Walter Winchell, Ed Sullivan, Sidney Skolsky.
For the West Coast.
Fanny Bryce.
Yeah.
Louis B. Mayer.
Yeah.
And Joe DiMaggio.
Well, you don't, Joe DiMaggio, huh?
That's right.
You don't, was on the opposition last week and you mentioned him on our show. you don't serve the gossip columnists asparagus with hot tips, do you?
No, you just give them good food.
Well, what would you say is your outstanding dish, Lindy, your food frenesee?
It depends on your taste. If you like it, I have it, and it's the best.
Do you have any, some creditors are in. Thank you. Do you have any one tidbit that no other restaurant in New York serves?
Yes. I serve a baby sturgeon that comes from Davenport, Iowa. Delicious.
Yeah? They sneaked in a commercial for the sturgeon, huh? Well, a sturgeon is really nothing but a salmon with class, after all. Well, beside the local celebrities, your place is sort of a rendezvous for Hollywood stars when they come east, too, isn't it?
Yes. They all drop in. Jack Oakey, Wallace Berry, Jack Benny, Boynton Allen.
Now, just a minute. Just a second, Lindy. That name you mentioned for show there. the hieroglyphics that you gave out as Benny sneaked into that roster. If you'll recall, just a sentence before, if you want to look back in the script there, I said stars who came into your place. Not bit players, Lindy. You know, Benny has only one claim to fame. In my last picture, he played the longest extra part in Hollywood history.
Jack is a nice fellow, Fred.
Well, you're in business, Lindy. I can tell the truth. In my estimation, Benny is strictly an automat gourmet. A slot glutton. You can always tell when Benny has had a big meal. His fingers are tired. His fingers are... But tell me, what was he doing in your place? Breeding termites with your toothpicks or something?
No. Jack told me to send 2 portions of gefilte fish by airplane to a friend of his in Hollywood.
Gefilte fish? That's aquarium hash, isn't it? Well, after all, that's not so remarkable. Benny has been in planes himself, and if the airlines will fly a ham across the country, there's no reason why they shouldn't fly a fish. Well, enough about Herbert Marshall's stooge, Lindy. There's only one thing I've forgotten to ask you, and it's the acid test of a restaurateur.
What's that, Fred?
You're getting intonations with the second. Another show, and I'll be doing straight here. I can hear that. Well, the acid test of a restaurateur, which I'm about to ask you, Lindy. Did you ever eat in Lindy's, Lindy?
3 times a day I eat my own food, so help me.
And that's all you under that vest. Well, that's good enough for me. But tell me, to what do you attribute the fame and prosperity of your celebrity canteen?
To my wife's help and suggestion, Fred. Some of our best dishes, the gefilte fish, the boiled chicken, and the marinita herring are from my wife's recipes.
Well, that's swell. You know, most men attribute their success strictly to themselves, and it's mighty nice of you to give the woman a little side order of credit, Lindy.
After all, she's listening in, Fred.
I get it. Well, I want to thank you for this little glimpse behind the boiled beef, Lindy. And with all of this talk about chicken, roast beef, steaks, and chops, you know, I feel pretty good about our interview tonight.
Why, Fred?
Well, this is one time the sponsor can't say there wasn't enough meat in the script.
Good night, Fred.
Good night, and thank you, Fred. That was very nice, Lindy. This seems to bring us to the Martins, ladies and gentlemen, gaily clad in Bermuda lounge gear. Did you girls see a robin this morning? Well, to make a long introduction short, the Martins sing "The Rhythm is Red, White, and Blue."
Put that Shim Sham
and that Lindy
hop away.
There's a brand new rhythm, that's the top today. Oh, that it's even topped way up on Mars. 100 million people give it 40 stars. Birds in the trees, they're all singing, even the breeze seems to say, you better get up and jive into a rhythm that's red and white and blue. When you feel low, just get swinging, you can be so bright and gay. The rhythm in you bids gloom adieu when the rhythm is red and white and blue. We all know how much it's worth to laugh and make our livings. There's no other place on earth
where they use up to Thanksgiving.
The future may hold lots of changes. Things will go old, still I say, music forever will be new
while the rhythm is red and white and blue.
From Maine to Texas, from Texas to Maine, the whole darn country is singing this strain. From California to South Carolina, they've caught the spirit and fallen in line. They're singing a new song, a red, white, and blue song.
'Cause we all know how much it's worth to laugh and make our livings. There's no other place on earth where they use up to Thanksgiving.
The future may hold lots of changes. Things will grow old, still I say, the music forever will be new while the rhythm is red and the rhythm is white.
Jimmy, yes. Just a minute. Who was that eye gay standing over there, the big Erd Bay, who keeps puffing on a cigar?
Gee, I don't know, Fred. Isn't he the house dick?
No, he isn't. I don't remember. No badge on. I better check up on him.
You better.
Say, pardon me, friend. Are you waiting for somebody?
Oh, golly, can you see me? I thought I was invisible.
A big side of beef like you? Well, who do you think you are, the Shadow?
No, I'm Elmer Bolts, the inventor.
Really?
I'm testing out an idea I got for soldiers. You see the cigar I got here?
Yeah.
Well, my invention is that every soldier goes into action smoking a cigar, see?
Yeah.
He lays down his own smoke screen, like I was doing.
Yeah.
It makes you invisible.
Well, only it doesn't make you invisible.
I can't understand it. They hide battleships with smoke screens, don't they?
Yeah.
If the Navy does it, why can't I?
Well, for an answer to that, I refer you to our Navy expert, Admiral Wallington. Elucidate, Admiral.
Well, it's true that in modern naval maneuvers, a few destroyers can lay down a smoke screen that conceals an entire fleet. But the smoke from that cigar is like smoke pouring from the exhaust of an automobile. It conceals nothing, reveals everything. Smoke means trouble. So before your car becomes a smoker, help reduce excessive wear in your motor. Wear due to heat, wear due to cold, and wear due to oil impurities. changed to Insulated Haviland. Insulated Haviland stands up under the high temperatures to which oil is subjected in modern engines. Insulated Haviland flows quickly, too, guards against the wear of cold, dry starts. Haviland also is distilled to remove carbon-forming impurities. Change now to Insulated Haviland at your Texaco dealer. Help reduce excessive wear in your motor. The Texaco Star Theater continues immediately after a short pause for your station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Number 10, Lullaby Lane, played by Al Goodman and his Texaco Tunesmiths. And now, oh, Kenny. Where's Kenny, Portland?
I don't know.
You know, Kenny's getting careless lately. He didn't show up for rehearsal this morning, and I just happened to remember it. I'm going to bawl him out now while
oh,
I think.
Kenny's got a good excuse.
What excuse?
He was captured by Indians.
Kenny was captured by...
Kenny said it was terrible. There he was, surrounded by savages.
Oh, now, oh, look, Portland, if you're going to believe everything Kenny tells you, you'll go bake a berserk. You know, Kenny should stop eating before he goes to bed at night.
But Kenny said...
Kenny's conversation all stems from nightmares. If he ever gets insomnia, he just won't have anything to talk about anymore. You know that boy's imagination stretches farther than Don Wilson's girdle, if that is...
You mean Kenny's fibbing?
Of course he's fibbing. Last week, we had an Indian on the program, and Kenny needed an alibi for not showing up at rehearsal today. So he invented a lie, sprinkled with Indians, you see.
This week, Kenny should not be lying. Saturday is Papa's birthday.
Saturday is also George Washington's birthday, Mr. Goodman.
What else? This is precisely what Goodman is saying.
What has George Washington got to do with Papa? Elucidate.
This I will do later. First, Goodman will explain.
Oh. Well, one thing at a time, naturally. Fine, explain that.
Goodman is a citizen of this country.
Yeah, so?
Washington is the father of this country.
So?
So Washington is Goodman's papa.
And?
Saturday is Papa's birthday.
So?
So this week it is obvious Kenny should not be lying.
A masterpiece of broken logic.
Hi, folks, what's a good word?
Truth is the good word, Kenny, now that you're here, if you know the word.
You mean truth, as in truth and consequences?
Yes, that's the one, if you can't go any farther back than that. What is this story you told Portland about being snagged by Indians?
Boy, was I in a spot. My hair was a pompadour all day.
Oh, Kenny, this Indian story is a crude half-breed fabrication. Now, you missed rehearsal, and you invented this Penobscot peccadillo, hoping that we'd think it was the truth.
But I tell you, those Indians were surrounding me...
Oh, look, Kenny... When we want a fibber on this program, we'll get one complete with Molly. Now, you better stop telling these stories.
Yes, you'll be drummed out of the Boy Scouts, Kenny.
I'll handle this, Portland. Kenny, are you acquainted with the story of George Washington and the cherry tree?
Oh, no, you don't, F.A. I didn't make up that one.
Well, that happens to be a true story, Kenny. Now, your Indian story is pure but clumsy invention.
Honest, F.A., and may I never live to stop another good humor man.
And don't take those vanilla oaths around here. All I want is the truth. Now, what happened?
Well, I was on my way to rehearsal, and I got lost in Central Park. Yeah. That's when the Indians got me.
But there are no Indians in Central Park.
Not even little Indians?
Not even Pepis.
Well, whoever they were beating tom-toms, and they got me.
Well, if they got you, how did you get away?
I paid the ransom.
What ransom?
I had to give the chief my yo-yo.
You gave the Indian chief your yo-yo and he let you go?
Honest, Mr. Allen.
Kenny, you're lying.
No, Mr. Allen, I'm
now,
not.
You don't think anyone is going to believe that routine.
I believe it.
Quiet, Portland. You still believe in Orson Welles.
Mr. Allen, if you don't believe me, you can ask my Uncle Phil.
What does this blood relative through a transfusion know about it?
Uncle Phil was with me.
Another lie, you see? Now, you just said when the Indians caught you, you were alone.
I was. I was a lookout for Uncle Phil. I was watching for cops.
Watching for cops?
Yeah, on account of the grass.
Oh, your Uncle Phil was walking on the grass.
No, he was eating it.
Your Uncle Phil eats grass?
Yes, he thinks he's a horse.
Oh, no, that way. Now, that's done it, Kenny. Aren't you ashamed of yourself? Now, look where one little lie has led you. You started trying to alibi missing a rehearsal, and you wind up by trying to make us believe that your Uncle Phil thinks he's a horse.
But you forced me into it, F.A.
Kenny didn't know what he was saying, Mr. Allen.
That's right. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have said my Uncle Phil thinks he's a horse.
You wouldn't?
No. It's a family secret.
Well, that is definitely the last straw, Kenny Baker. First, you say you ransomed yourself from an Indian chief, giving him your yo-yo. Now, just to save your own skin, you're willing to say that your very own Uncle Phil thinks he's a horse. Why, shame on you, slandering a member of your own family.
Gosh, maybe I shouldn't have said that about Uncle Phil.
You ought to hang your head until further notice.
Well, maybe I did exaggerate a little. You know, youth, impetuous youth.
Well, I hope it wasn't so impetuous from here. I hope you realize now where lies can lead you. Kenny, will you promise to stick to the truth from now on, to try to emulate George Washington?
I promise, F.A.
People will like you better for it, Kenny.
Sure.
In the beginning, frankly, telling the truth will cost you money.
Please, Maestro.
But honesty is the best policy.
That is right.
Although, personally, I'm with Metropolitan. A 20-year endowment to keep up the policy is killing me.
Please, Maestro, will you get back on your podium and start Kenny's music? Kenny, your podium is dirty, too, I know. Kenny, your song is Come With... Oh, what's this? Come in.
Well, Kenneth?
Uncle Phil!
I'll attend to you later, Kenneth. Mr. Allen, I heard my name mentioned here on your program. I'm Kenny's Uncle Phil.
Well, I'm sorry Kenny embarrassed you, but I'm sure, you're much younger than I thought you were, Uncle Phil. Your voice just changing and all. I thought you were a much older man.
I don't worry.
Well, I'm sorry Kenny embarrassed you, but I'm sure Kenny has learned his lesson.
You really think so, sir?
I can assure you, sir, that Kenny will be a truthful boy from now on.
Well, the family's very grateful for what you're doing for Kenneth, Mr. Allen.
We try our best, Uncle Phil.
And we thank you. Well, I don't want to intrude. Goodbye, Mr. Allen.
Goodbye, sir.
Goodbye, Kenneth.
Goodbye, Uncle Phil.
Well, I'm off.
Well, I will...
You see, Mr. Allen, I told you that
Kenny,
my...
Kenny, don't say a word. Not a word. Just sing your
Gosh,
number.
Gosh, Mr. Allen, did you hear Uncle Phil winning?
Quiet. I know when I'm licked. Don't mention it to anybody. Kenny, let's have your... Portland, see who that is.
All right.
Uncle Phil sure is a card, isn't he, F.A.? You should have seen him the day he came in fourth at Hialeah.
I don't want to discuss either... either discuss or lay a bet on your Uncle Kenny.
Mr. Allen!
Yes, Portland?
Look who's at the door!
An Indian chief.
How?
How what, chief?
How you work this yo-yo?
No, no!
Hours away in visions bright redeemed. the fleeting joys of days, dreaming the happy hours, dreaming the happy hours away. Come where my love lies dreaming, is sweetly dreaming the happy hours away. Come with a lute, come with a lay, my own love is sweetly dreaming, her beauty beaming. Come where my love lies dreaming, is sweetly dreaming the happy hours away. Her slumber, thoughts bright and free, dance through her dreams like gushing melody. Light is her young heart, light may it be, whether awake or dreaming. Come where my love lies, happy hours away. Come where my love lies dreaming, yes, is sweetly dreaming the happy hours
Pardon me, Fred.
Oh, yes, Larry Elliott.
I want you to hear something. Listen to this and see if you know what it is.
Sounds like a man with asthma blowing at a bowl of noodle soup, Larry.
No, no, Fred. Those are automobiles pouring off the factory assembly lines. Today, the automobile manufacturers of America are producing cars at the rate of 1,500 each working hour. 25 shining new cars every minute. Almost one new car every 2 seconds of the working day.
Well, if I only had on my hat, Larry, I'd certainly tip it to those automakers. You know, it's marvelous how they can speed up production when the occasion requires.
Yes, Fred, and just as marvelous as their flexibility of production is the flexibility of the modern car itself. Just think what you may call upon your car to do, even in one short drive. Pick up from a standing start to cruising range. Throttle down to a crawl in heavy traffic. Swiftly gather speed as the road opens up ahead. When your car answers that wide range of demands with constant yet flexible power, that's really driving. And it's the kind of driving you'll enjoy with Sky Chief, Texaco's different premium gasoline. For Sky Chief, power responds to your most fleeting whim. A split-second opening in traffic and flash, you're through. The challenge of a hill and zoom, you're over. Enjoy that kind of flexible power. Fly the highways with Sky Chief. Your Texaco dealer's premium gasoline for those who want the best.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Texaco Workshop players. Tonight they present a saga of a fluid. This playlet is called Milk. Milk. What is milk? Where was milk first discovered? What is the story behind this nutritious lactic extract of Guernsey? Professor Quiz, on a recent program, said to a lady contestant,
"Where does milk come from, madam?"
And the lady answered,
"I don't know. It's always there when I get up."
Yes, that is the common theory. It is always there when I get up.
But where does milk come from? Who discovered milk? Hippocrates, the first Greek physician, once remarked...
We didn't have milk in ancient Greece. It was B.C., before cows.
And... and Hippy was right. Milk wasn't discovered until 1807. In March 1807, during a severe windstorm in Tampa, Florida, a farmer's baby was blown under a cow. As the cow was about to be whirled away in the typhoon, the little baby reached up and held on. 3 days later, the father found the cow in Jacksonville, Florida, with the little baby still clinging to it. The father said,
Gosh, the baby's fatter than when he was blown away. What's the little rascal been living on for 3 days?
The father resolved to find out how that little baby had lived under the cow for 3 whole days. And one morning in Jacksonville, Florida, the farmer said,
I'm going to tamper with that cow.
And he went, and he did. Later, when the farmer was asked how he finally found that the cow was concealing milk, the farmer replied,
I owe my success to a little jerk, but don't mention no names.
Since that day, the cow has been regimented. Milk today is a big business. Competition is keen. Milk barons bid for your lactic favors. The following episode recently took place in the offices of a monster milk magnate. We find the monster milk magnate entering his office. Good morning, Miss Kurt.
Good morning, Mr. Allen.
Call an advertising agency. Call the nearest broadcasting company. Call the reporters from all the leading papers and get them over here right away.
Yes, sir. What's all the excitement?
For 20 years, Mammoth Milk has fought off all competition.
I know, sir.
When other companies pasteurized milk, I pulverized it.
Yes, sir.
When they homogenized milk, I pragmatized it.
Yes, sir.
Today, other companies are dramatizing milk. Mammoth is going to advertise it. I have coined the perfect milk slogan, Miss Kurt.
What is it?
Mammoth, the milk from happy heifers.
The milk from happy heifers, wonderful.
Thank you, I think
it's... proofs for your magazine ad, F.A.
Well, who is this?
It's candid camera shot, John Barrymore drinking a glass of Mammoth milk.
Well, how did you get Barrymore to drink milk?
We put an olive in it to fool him. Yeah, Barrymore thought it was a cloudy martini.
Hey, rush this magazine copy out right away.
Okay.
There's a man waiting, Mr. Allen.
Well, show him in, if you
yes,
will.
Yes, sir. This way, please.
Thank you. I'm from the advertising agency, Mr. Allen. You phone?
Yes, yes, yes. What agency are you from?
Beaten, Batten, Mutton, and Button.
Which one are you?
My name's Fish.
Well, I don't talk to small fry, Fish.
But I'm a member of the firm.
Beaten, Batten, Mutton, and Button?
Yeah. My name won't fit on the door. We have a small door.
You don't use the knob?
Not in the advertising game.
Oh, naturally, it slipped my mind. Well, Fish... I'm launching an advertising campaign on milk. I'm going to use a slogan.
Oh, yeah, we got a million slogans. Have you got wastebasket hair?
No, no.
There's that mattress slogan, good to the last plop.
No, I...
And then there's that toupee slogan, ask the man who combs one.
No, no, I have got a slogan that'll make these sound like double talk, Fish.
Yeah, what is it?
Mammoth, the milk from happy heifers.
A classic.
Thank you. I want this slogan in every newspaper and magazine in the country.
Oh, you're going to pen on Beaten, Batten, Mutton, and Button, Mr. Allen.
Well, thank you, Mr.
The name is Fish. I'll do a whale of a job.
Well, don't flounder, Fish. Get to work.
Yeah, I will. Just for the halibut.
Miss Kurt?
Yes, sir.
Take a memo to the president of the broadcasting company.
Yes, sir.
Dear sir, Mammoth Milk is going on the air. I'm featuring my slogan, Milk from Happy Heifers. You got that?
Yes, sir.
Now, here's the lineup for my radio show. The program opens with a cow mooing. Then into a milk theme song, What's This You're Pulling on Me?
Yes?
Then bang, into a 20-minute commercial. Mammoth Milk, blah, 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 right through to the end.
Yes?
Then Elsie the cow is a guest star. A real live interview. What the Rotolactor has done to my shape. The woman's angle, you know.
Yes, sir?
Then a 10-minute commercial, Mammoth Milk, blah, 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 blah. And into the finish. The finish, a male chorus lapping out of the studio onto the sidewalk and into the street. A male chorus, 200 milkmen singing, I'll take you home again, Holstein.
Is that the, that the buzzer?
Yes, there's a newspaper man waiting.
A newspaper man? Has he got a notebook or a camera?
A camera.
He's from PM. Show him in.
Yes, sir.
You're from PM, sir?
Yes, I'm flanking. We got a flash. Something's going on here. What is it? Labor trouble, I hope?
No. Mammoth Milk has, set down your camera and your tripods. You can stand it right there. Mammoth Milk has coined a new slogan, Mr. Flanken. Milk from happy heifers.
Wonderful. What's the story behind this slogan,
Milk
Alan?
From happy heifers sums up my life's word, Mr. Flanken. My life's work, rather. I could mention it in a word. I've led a life that I thought out along the lines of Reader's Digest. I live every minute of the day. Mr. Flanken, I've got 20,000 cows working for me. My goal has always been happiness in every stall.
An idealist, eh?
Yes. Every cow is my personal guest. The barns are air-conditioned. Manger maids turn down the sanitary hay for each cow at sundown. And we have band concerts back of the barn every Sunday. Toscanini informal in overalls. Conducting with a hoe handle.
Wonderful.
Yes, every cow in my employ is happy. We don't force them, Mr. Flanken. They're milked by men wearing soft silk gloves with pussy willow palms. And on the hour, my efficiency men check on each cow's mood.
Well, I'll
see. See, now here's the stall survey for 11 o'clock. Mr. Crosley goes into every stall personally. You see, number 53 here lowing gently, 54 grinning, 55 chuckling. Every cow is happy.
Milk from happy heifer. This is a great PM story.
My slogan's 100%, Mr. Flanken, and my word is as good as my milk. I've been selling milk for 30 years, and I've yet to hear my first complaint.
Mr. Allen.
Well, who is that?
I'm Cringe, driver 47, Mr.
Well,
Allen.
Well, I'm in conference, Cringe.
Yeah, but this is a catastrophe, Mr. Allen.
What's wrong, Cringe?
A pint of milk has been returned.
What?
Yeah, Mrs. Monroe, 57th Street, returned this pint. She says it's sour.
Sour? You're lying, Cringe.
Honest, Mr. Allen, look.
Why, it's all curdled on top. Looks sour to me.
Sour? If this gets out, I'm ruined. I've signed radio and magazine contracts for $1 million, guaranteeing milk from happy heifers.
The cow that gave this pint wasn't happy.
Which cow is it, Cringe? What is the name on that bottle cap?
It's number 76, Isabel.
Miss Curd, get Isabel in here right away.
Yes, sir.
And buzz for Wassup.
Yes, sir.
Who's Wassup?
My psychoanalyst. Wassup psychoanalyzes the cows every morning.
He must have slipped up on Isabel.
Dad, if Isabel is in the dumps, Flanken, milk from happy heifers, my slogan isn't worth a farthing.
What a story for PM. Slogan sabotaged by sulking steer.
Here's Mr. Wassup and Isabel, sir.
Which one is Wassup?
This is me without the horns.
Well, you were both on all fours. I couldn't tell.
Quiet, Isabel, quiet. That's a girl. Now, what's wrong, Mr. Allen?
What's wrong? Isabel here is wrong.
Oh?
Taste this milk, Wassup. It's sour.
Yes, there is a dash of melancholy there.
Now, if Isabel's neurosis isn't cured, Wassup, my slogan is ruined. Mammoth Milk will be bankrupt.
Steady, Isabel, steady. I'll psychoanalyze her again, sir.
Examine her thoroughly, Wassup. Fluoroscope, stethoscope, and horoscope.
Yes, right away, sir. Sit down, Isabel.
Oh, not in my wastebasket, Isabel. Here, sit up here on my desk.
I'll start with the stethoscope. Inhale, Isabel. Uh-huh. I'll try her reflexes. Stand back, I'll hit her knee.
Here, I flew back like a pump handle.
Quiet, please, I'm diagnosing.
Sorry.
Say ah, Isabel. No, ah. That's better.
Well, what's your verdict, Wassup?
Physically, Isabel is perfect.
Maybe it's something mental.
Impossible, unless it's hereditary.
Well, where's her chart?
Her chart is right here.
Uh-huh. She was in good spirits at roll call.
Yes.
Frolicked in her bath. Ate a hearty breakfast. Playful, being D-lactic.
What could have upset her?
Did anyone speak sharply within Isabel's hearing?
Oh, no, Mr. Allen. Isabel's sign was up. Quiet, cow-giving.
You say Isabel didn't sulk being D-lactic?
No, she just stood looking out of the window. Isabel seemed to be lost in thought. Like she was pitching moo.
Pitching moo, that's it.
What's it?
Looking out of that window, Isabel saw something that upset her. Some horrible thing that caused melancholia to tincture her milk.
I was right there with her all the time.
What was going on outside of that window, Wassup? Speak up, man. What met Isabel's gaze?
Well, nothing. There was just a big billboard across the street.
No more there isn't. They're tearing it down to make a parking space.
That's all I wanted to know. Miss Curd?
Yes, sir.
Call up and buy that property across the street.
If I can put that billboard back up, my slogan, Milk from Happy Heifers, is saved.
I don't understand, sir.
How could tearing down a billboard upset Isabel?
That billboard advertised tobacco, Mr. Flanken. Isabel thinks she's been jilted.
Jilted?
Yes. Isabel's been flirting with the bull on that Bull Durham sign. We're a little late, ladies and gentlemen. This is Fred Allen saying goodnight for the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast. Good night. Thank you. Good night.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Hello again. Welcome to another episode of the Jack Benny Show from 75 years ago today. Well, not today, but 75 years ago this week. This one I thought I'd give you a warning on. First of all, sound quality is really nice on this episode, which is great. The problem with it is, I believe this is either it skips through the episode or this is only the first half because it's only about 11 minutes long. Third thing I thought I'd tell you is that I could tell when I was listening to it that the speed was off. It was too slow. So I speed corrected it. I increased the speed up to 3%, and that sounds right to me. When you hear all the voices, it sounds normal. So speed correction on these early episodes, a lot of them are too slow and need to be sped up. You can usually kind of tell, if it's a full episode, there are a certain length long. You look at the episodes before and after the sped up one, and you go, oh, it needs to be sped up by, you know, if the other episodes are 25 minutes long and it's 22 minutes long, you go, okay, I got to speed it up to 25 minutes and let's see what that sounds like, and then that usually fixes the problem. But on an episode like this one, that's cut and short, and so there's no way for me to know how long this part should really be. I just kind of did it by ear and was just listening, and I'm really surprised that so many of the episodes, they've had a lot of the issues with them corrected by people, but so many people don't seem to understand or fix the speed issues with the episodes. I don't know what goes on there, but if I detect a speed issue, I will fix it. So there you go. And I don't know about you, but I'm really enjoying these episodes from 75 years ago, especially when you hear them, and the very next day you hear an episode, one of the newer episodes from just 60 years ago, you can really hear the difference between the two. So it's neat to kind of compare them. And I love the fact that Don and Mary and Kenny Baker and Jack, of course, are all on these episodes from 75 years ago, and you kind of hear a different Jell-O introduction. That's one thing that throws people off. They go, the episode still sounds slow because the Jell-O introduction is so slow. Well, they just did it differently. They changed it. The last change they would really make in it would be in the 36-37 season, so next season they'll speed it up and it'll change how it sounds, and then it pretty much stays like that forever on. What else was I going to get into? I don't remember. Anyway, I was going to cover some other ground here, but we will leave that and I guess cover that tomorrow. I will try and get that Buck Benny episode up and running tomorrow that covers the contest and everything. I should be able to. And have a great Saturday.
J-E-L-L-O.
The Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny with Johnny Green and his orchestra. The orchestra opens the program with Life Begins When You're in Love. Thank you.
a tune, a fragrance, or a taste often brings us back very pleasant memories. So if you're away from home sometime and you're missing a touch of real homey feeling, go into a restaurant and wind up your meal with Jell-O. You can count on Jell-O being just as good in a restaurant as at home, but you must make sure you get genuine Jell-O. No other gelatin dessert has Jell-O's extra-rich, twice-as-good fruit flavor. No other has found Jell-O's secret of capturing that luscious, ripe fruit taste and sealing it right in. So if you want the best, always order Jell-O by name. Whether you order at a grocer's, in a restaurant, or hotel, insist on the one and only genuine Jell-O. And now we bring to you a man who took Horace Greeley's advice and went west, then took Jell-O's advice and came back east, Jack Benny.
I'm sick, eh? Hello again. This is Jack Benny coming to you with the latest old jokes and quips through the courtesy of what is that name again, Don?
Jell-O.
That's right, of course. I'm so bad at remembering names.
Yeah, I can understand that, Jack. I don't mention Jell-O very often.
No, Don, only every time you exercise your lips.
Well, Jack, Jell-O is so easy to say and so much easier to eat, and that's why it's the largest-selling gelatin dessert in the world.
You see, folks, what Don is really trying to prove is that this is not a toothpaste program.
All right, all right. Well, not changing the subject, Jack. But I believe you had a birthday this month, didn't you?
Yes, Don, February the 14th. I'm a little Valentine.
Well, well, well. Congratulations. And how old are you, Jack?
What's that?
I said, how old are you?
Oh, yes. Tonight, folks, we are beginning a contest. The one I started to tell you about last week. In which every member of your family can participate.
Well, you certainly don't look it.
Thanks.
Come on, Jack, how old are you? Now, what are you ashamed of?
Well, Don, you know life begins at 40.
Yes?
And that makes me just 2 years old.
Oh. Well, Jack, all I can say is that I hope you live to be 100.
It won't be long now. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Mary.
I just thought I'd drop in and earn the few bucks I get here.
Well, that's nice. Say, Mary, you know I had a birthday 2 days ago.
I know it, Jack. Here's a present I brought you.
Oh, thanks. A book. What's it about?
How to prevent rheumatism at your age.
Now, wait a minute. I'm not that old.
Say, Jack, your birthday was February the 14th, wasn't it?
Yeah. Why, what are you laughing at?
See, if you'd have waited 8 days more, you'd have been the father of our country.
I suppose if I'd have been born 2 days sooner, I'd be Abraham Lincoln.
Imagine your face on a penny.
Well, anyway, Mary, it's a great honor to be born in the same month as Lincoln and Washington. Imagine the three of us crowded into such a short month. I don't know how February did it.
Yes, Jack, it certainly is a great honor.
Yeah.
Jack Benny, first in war, first in peace, and second in the Crosley Report.
I hope. Who's there?
I can't tell a lie. It's Kenny Baker.
Oh, come in, Kenny.
Hello, Jack. Happy New Year.
What?
I mean, happy birthday.
That guy can't even read.
No. Well, Kenny, you've been in New York a whole week now. How are you getting along?
Fine, Jack. Gee, it's one thrill after another.
Now, have you been to a Madison Square Garden yet?
Yeah, I was there last week. I saw a bunch of fellows on skates with big sticks beating up a donut.
Kenny, listen, they were playing hockey.
No, they all showed up.
While I keep standing, signals the end of the day. Palm trees are bowing and bending to all the sweethearts who stay. Moon over Miami, shining. shine on my love and me, so we can stroll beside the roll of the rolling sea. Moon over Miami, shine on as we begin a dream or two that may come true when the tide comes in. Hark to the song of the smiling troubadour, hark to the throbbing guitar. Hear how the waves offer thunderous applause after each song to the stars. Soon over Miami, you know we're waiting for a little love, a little kiss, a little that, a little this on Miami.
Kenny Baker singing Moon Over Miami. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I understand the moon isn't over it right now. Ladies and gentlemen, if possible... that flopped, didn't it? And now, ladies and gentlemen, if possible, without further interruption, I would like to tell you about our contest. Tonight we are starting a contest that really does require brains.
Why don't you start something we can all play?
We're not in it. Well, anyway, folks, this contest will go on for a period of 10 weeks, at the end of which time, 3 valuable prizes will be given away. To the winner, the first prize will be a cash payment amounting to... the mailman. Mary, hold this bag of gold. We'll give it away yet.
Okay, here's your letter, Jack.
Dear Mr. Benny, we have been listening to all of your programs.
Why don't you open it?
Oh, yes. dear Mr. Benny, we have been listening to all... Funny says the same inside there, doesn't it? We've been listening to all of your programs and have enjoyed your new series very much. But as your program is only half hour and you only work half of that, would like to know what you do with the rest of your time. My 3 sons are also loafers and would appreciate a few pointers from you. Signed, Mrs. Hugo Chase. Mary, take an answer. Hey, wait a minute, will you? Dear Mrs. Hugo Chase, received your letter, and I'm very happy to know that you like our program. Regarding my spare time, I beg to state that besides being on the air, I am also a druggist. Having studied chemistry, physiology, and pastrami. Make that hot pastrami, Mary.
How do you spell hot?
Some secretary.
Well, I get paid for my look.
Oh, continue the letter. I have my own drugstore, and I might add our program has helped my aspirin business tremendously. If you care to listen in, I'll be back to work immediately after the next number. Did you get that, Mary?
Yes, but there's no ribbon in the typewriter.
Mary, what do you do in your spare time?
I certainly do.
Play, John.